Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about a book by Robert Atkinson, The Story of Our Time. How is humanity evolving? How are things changing? Are we the same as people as we were many eons ago? Have we changed over the decades and centuries? You know, if we look back on it, there was so much enlightenment in so many eons before. Then we got up to the cowboys and Indians where it was shoot 'em up city and everything was basic. Now we're back into let's think about robots and how the world is, and we really want world peace. So much is going on in the world. We say, what's really happening to human beings as they evolve on the earth? Is it a linear progression? Or are there multiple timelines and we're all existing at the same time? Who knows? Robert, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Dr. Jeanette.
Robert, your book, The Story of Our Time, From Duality to Interconnectedness to Oneness, you know, it definitely shows a progression over time, and you have a lot of historical aspects in your book that show how humanity has evolved. Just as I said, don't you think humanity, I mean, we've come up, we've gone down, it's almost like, the radio resonance on a screen, yes?
Definitely. We exist within cycles, and depending on our perspective, and the perspective that I take in the book is a kind of a big picture perspective on it all. And so we can, from a distance, we can see better the cyclical process that we have been always been going through, but at the same time, that cyclical process is also linear. So it's both at the same time, and that means that each step forward, it follows the same kind of pattern as the cycle of the seasons. Another way to look at that too would be the basic pattern of transformation, which I would think of as beginning, muddle, and resolution. There have been many others that have looked at the same pattern of transformation through rites of passage or through the world's mythology. Mm-hmm. And other ways of breaking that down have been used, like separation, initiation, and return. But when we put it in more contemporary terms, like beginning, muddle, and resolution, we begin to realize that there's a purpose to the problems that we find ourselves in every once in a while. There's a purpose to the muddles, and that is to not only to get us to a resolution, through that muddle to a resolution, but in doing that, we bring about and we complete the process of transformation that whole pattern is designed to lead us through. And each time that happens is a kind of a leap forward, or at least a step, sometimes a leap forward in our progress. And that's how I see it, as kind of both incorporating both linear and cyclical at the same time.
Right, because each time when you progress forward in a linear fashion, you're really only progressing with that which you know and can conceive of at that moment. In other words, you can't conceive of what would happen if we take you up in a space capsule and drop you out, because you don't have any abilities to be able to perceive of that. So in other words, it's not in your wheelhouse, so to speak. You can almost go to the ends of your wheelhouse and maybe just a bit beyond that, but then you'll have to come out and bring all of your other faculties, all of the other everything else back together to be able to get to the next jump. In other words, you can't go in pieces. You can't say my mind and my thoughts can see that, but then again, you can't act on it, be presented in it, and be in that position if all of the unity is not in that, correct?
Yeah, the unity is the key piece to that whole process and progress, because that's what the conflict that we do confront every, you know, in our lives all the time is meant to really identify the opposing forces that exist all the time all around us, but they don't exist just for themselves only. The opposing forces all around us exist to help us to see and come back to that original state of unity or oneness. So it's definite. That's a kind of a key theme to the book as well, that that unity and oneness is the goal of all of the conflict and disorder that we're experiencing. And that process is as true on the personal level as it is on the collective level, because they both follow the same universal law.
Right, because when you get to that edge, it's really at the point of what is your reality, you know? Because when you get to that reality, you can't supersede reality if you can't conceive of it. And then you come to the point where you say in your book, when you talk about reality and transformation, and then transformation is that point that you're hanging on the edge and you're just hoping and trusting and you just let go. So that kind of takes you to that space. Isn't that correct?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. The transformation is about bringing us back to our original state of oneness and the condition and the state that the universe, that the entire creation is always in. So that's all about recognizing that reality, the entirety of the entire creation is one, even though we tend to break it down into pieces and parts and opposing forces and all those things.
Right.
On a big picture level, reality is one. And because we break it down, we have this struggle, we've created this struggle to get back to that original understanding of and really getting back to that our inherent consciousness of oneness.
It's really about our limited ability to understand and comprehend. You know, when you talk about what is reality also, you know, reality is that which you can conceive of based upon facts, what is presented to you and how far your mind can think. But also, too, when you say about the dark times or the dark spaces or the dark forces, that's really kind of what allows us, rather, to be able to explore it, a situation and experience and existence in all its glory, versus being able to say, I see that, let me jump on that because, and then just do it, you know?
Yeah, that's very true too. This might be a good time to bring in the one chart that I have in the book, which is about how the consciousness continuum can lead to opposite outcomes. And so this is about how we see things determines where we end up. And in the chart, I have if we start with, as we do now and have for centuries, if not millennia, we typically start after a certain age. We're not born with this, but we acquire a consciousness of duality. And if we see things around us with that consciousness of duality, then that's going to lead to certain other things because of that place that we start out with. So in the chart, I kind of describe how starting out with a consciousness of duality leads to an understanding or seeing separation, seeing difference, seeing all these kinds of superior and inferior groups and dominant and subordinate groups and categorization. And that leads on to stereotypes and bias and prejudice and oppression, mm-hmm. racism, and eventually to war. That's the only way that things will progress, as we have, if we only have a consciousness of duality. But at the same time, that consciousness continuum that we all have access to can lead in the opposite direction if we start out with a consciousness of oneness or a consciousness of wholeness. Mm-hmm. With that as our starting point, we then see the value of multiculturalism, we see inclusivity, we see compassion, we desire harmony, and we want love to give and to receive love, and we understand equality and cooperation. Mm-hmm. And the value of unity, and all of those in that direction. When we start out with a consciousness of wholeness, that's what will lead us to peace, to world peace.
Well, really, if you look at it, in the beginning, when kids are born, they're kind of they are born, as one. However, it's a continuous process of, parents are, this is how you're going to be because this is what I want you to be. This is how your teachers, this is what you're going to do because this is what we're telling you to do. So really, if we look at it, the society in which we live in is essentially creating that, because we don't nurture that, we don't support that, we don't, all aspects of it are not here, at this moment. And, if we, just like as we look at it, we say the duality really is all out there, because once people start saying, I want you to be this because I want you to be that, that takes away from your oneness, which is your identity. So immediately being born, your identity is already being shackled and circumscribed in a certain direction, in which the direction that, as we say, the linear progression of that direction, that's how it sends you in, correct?
That's right. The society that we're born into determines probably the largest degree who we become. It's probably impossible for any one individual, without consciously being aware of and deciding to have some kind of regular spiritual practice that that shows them and leads them in a different direction. Without that, society will lead us in that down that consciousness continuum and what a consciousness of duality leads to. So we have to make a conscious effort to recognize that first, and then decide to turn it around, to head in the other direction, which is really toward our inherent nature as not only human beings but as spiritual beings. If we recognize that and turn around and consciously work toward developing a consciousness of oneness, then we can do that with a lot of spiritual work and practice.
But then that also takes us to the point where are we really at one with the universe and everyone around us? We're really kind of still purveying that separateness, because we're leaving those people, and we're going to use a few labels here just for purpose of discussion. We're kind of saying that if they're leading that progression and you really want to step out of that, then that causes a separation there, almost like they're choosing to be able to have this oneness. However, you're not being oneness with the rest of the humanity and wherever they are, But then you also think about the yin and the yang sign. Well, maybe both need to exist to be able to coexist to bring together this wholeness. So in other words, a lot of times people will write books and they'll say, oh, we're going to talk about joy. Everybody should be joy and happy. Well, if everybody's joy and happy, then how would we know what joy and happy is? Do you know what I mean? In other words, to not know maybe the other side of it, to know other than existence. Or do we just get up every day and everything is, lollipops and roses? Probably not. That's not really what we're saying. So really, by saying that everything is going to be this oneness of existence, we're saying that everything can exist versus saying everything exists my way, right?
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a matter of recognizing that both do need to and always will exist within the whole. And the yin-yang is a perfect example. That can be left, right, up, down, any other pair of opposing forces that are opposites that you want to put in there, those all exist in this physical temporal world. There's no way around that. They're going to always exist. So it comes down to our conscious choice of which way we want to live our lives. We can choose to live in that duality and become overwhelmed by all those opposing forces that are around us, or we can choose to, through a real effort in terms of our spiritual work again, we can choose to focus on the oneness and make that our primary reality. And this is comes back to another piece that I've written about in other books about the journey of the hero, and that ends the pattern again for that is separation, initiation, and return. And the return part has the motif of learning how to become the master of two worlds. And that's because both worlds exist at the same time in the same place. But as master of two worlds, we can choose to live in either one that we want to, really. And so that's where the hard work comes in of choosing to live by our inherent consciousness of oneness rather than getting drawn in and totally swayed by all the opposing forces around us all the time. It's a matter of a conscious choice that we make.
Kind of like pulling us, you know, a little bit to say, here's the other side, to recognize it. But I also think that to the dance of both might be something that, as I would say, I've always spoken about the dance of life. That I had, 3 years where I basically did nothing but wail for 3 years because there was just so much, there was so much pent up. I had just gotten to a point in my consciousness stuff work or spiritual work, and it was time to just like release all of this, a lot of make change, transformation, whatever you want to call it. It was just what it was for then, and then it just moved on. And then go to another space, and then another space. Do you know what I mean? So in other words, if someone is like, they take care of themselves all the time, they're in the space of glory, they go on retreats and everything, all of a sudden they get this massive heart attack, and it's do or death or die, and they're like, oh, that wasn't the path I chose. It's sort of like, okay, then, right? we see a lot of, to choose the dance of life versus to choose just one or the other and notice that they both exist, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. They both exist and always will. And that's the choice that we have, again, is about which of those do we really want to live by or with. And the other part to that is, and the reason the choice is so important is because there is a purpose to all of that. There's a real essential purpose to what mystics call the dark night of the soul. Without that, transformation wouldn't be completed. So that's the purpose of it, is to ultimately to bring about transformation. And so it's also about embracing that dark night, whatever form it may take in our lives, and realize that that's the muddle that we're in right now, but it's designed to, and its purpose is to bring about the resolution that it's going to lead to eventually, which will result in our transformation and move us along in our spiritual growth. So it's about embracing all of that, and that whatever does come along in our path is, as Native Americans say, is meant to be there. It's meant for us, to help us along our way.
Right.
It's not about wanting to shove something aside because we are not interested in dealing with it right now, but recognizing that it's there for a purpose and figuring out how we get through it in order to bring about our own transformation in the process.
I've spoken many times about saying it's to be in the moment. We always talk about to be in the moment, you live in the moment. Well, in the moment right now may suck monkeys, You know, it may be absolutely horrible. It may be the most painful ever. But the point is, be in the pain and give it recognition and be with it versus saying, oh, I'm going to meditate my way out of this pain. Let me tell you, tomorrow your pain's going to be there again, you know, until you are sitting with it. You, in other words, like if a lesson shows up, or a situation, or if an experience, be with the experience versus always trying to get yourself out of it. You know what I mean? Because getting out of it, inevitably, it's going to say, well, but you didn't hear all the words I had to say. But you didn't show up and know what I'm about. But maybe you didn't fully understand. Or maybe I would like to share something else with you. Whatever that might be, you know, is be with it, you know. I think we see this quite often when people get sick. I'll use this as a simple example. People, let's say an elderly person gets sick and the kids come around, they want to take care of them. But after a while, they kind of get sick. They themselves get sick of, you know, literally get sick of taking care of the elder. And they're like, they drift off. When really there's that situation to say, this person is maybe needing love, maybe needing care, maybe it's their end of their life or whatever that might be. And they're kind of totally missing it by seeing it through their own eyes. Versus seeing it through the eyes of another or the eyes of oneness, you know, and that's a big difference, yes?
Definitely, yeah. And what you're describing now kind of reminds me of an interesting story that illustrates that same thing really well. I had the great pleasure and bounty of meeting Joseph Campbell in 1970, and that was... I went to one of his talks at Cooper Union that year, and as I was sitting there listening to him talk, he was comparing the mythological journey of the hero with the psychological process, and he was actually referring to schizophrenia and comparing the two. And he was saying they were essentially the same process, but he pointed out an interesting difference, which was that in the medical model, when someone has schizophrenia, the approach is to stop them along their way, give them some medication or whatever to allow them to turn around and come back from it. And he says that's the worst thing that can happen. And he went on with the illustration and mythology how rites of passage and all the world's great myths are designed with that pattern of separation, initiation, and return. And so his point was that you have to go through that initiation, whatever it is, whatever form it takes in our own lives, whatever form that muddle takes in our own lives, we have to go through that rather than one having any thought or desire to turn around and come back from it. We have to go through it because that's the only way that its resolution will come about. If we turn, if we did choose to turn around and come back from whatever the muddle was, that there would be no resolution, there would be no growth, there'd be no transformation until maybe the next time the same thing came around again.
Right. You know, I had spoken with someone the other day about that, and they were saying, oh, but we don't have to go through it. We can think ourselves out of it. And I'm going, good luck with that.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a process that needs to be followed through from its beginning to the end. And the other thing that happens a lot is we may get stuck in the muddle portion of it and think that that's all there is, or there's no way out, or, you know, it's impossible. We're going to be here the rest of our lives. And, of course, that, you know, there's no set time frame to being in any kind of a muddle or being in any initiation.
Right.
Each time has its own time frame for each of us. And so all we have to be not only patient with the process, but we have to know, first of all, knowledge of the process is one of the biggest things that will help us get through it. If we know in advance that at some point in our lives we're going to face an experience of beginning muddle resolution, we won't be so afraid of the muddle when it comes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll recognize it for what it is, a step leading towards a resolution, which ultimately leads towards our transformation. So, the knowledge of that helps, but hanging in there is so important, because when you also understand the archetype and the motifs of the entire journey, as Joseph Campbell has described it, one of those key motifs that is essential in getting us through the muddle or the initiation is the motif of assistance or guidance. And that can come to us in the most the most unexpected ways and from the most unusual or unthought of places. I mean, there's so many forms for that to take, for that to happen in today's world, from a friend, from a therapist, you know, any number of ways that, that can happen, that, that unexpected assistance and guidance can come to us. At the point where we just may be ready to give up and throw it in or whatever, that, that guidance and assistance will be there for us.
And also, too, I've always spoken many times about this, is that our lives are continuous. You know, this is not our only lifetime. So if we look at it, we say that I might get whatever I have to get in 5 seconds, let me meditate my way through it. Go ahead. If another person says that I've been dealing with this my whole lifetime, then that's true for them also. So it's true for everyone, whatever it is. It has nothing to do with all of us having to say that we're going to, hey, you have this experience, you've got 6 months, you've got a year, and you've got 2 years, and then we're going to either medicate you, put you away, or you got a big problem, you know? And then what happens then is another decreasing of your identity, and you're put into a paradigm. I think sometimes when we look at, you know, the bell curve, we always think of that, and the outliers, I always say, you know, society tends to push us towards the middle whenever we want to do, experience, or be anything other than that. We think of anxiety, depression, and bipolar, and mania. Those are perfect examples of the bell curve, you know, being outliers and people experiencing something, and they, society says, heck no way, you're disturbing my chi, you got to get in the middle, you know. We got to have a free-flowing thing here, and just don't you raise any feathers. So it's really society that tends to do that, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Society is a huge influence on all of us, and that's where the struggle comes in. I was just thinking, as you were talking about that, that there's a couple of quotes here that might shed a little light on this process as well. One is from Carl Jung, the psychologist. He says, "There is no balance, no system of self-regulation without opposition. Nothing so promotes the growth of consciousness as this inner confrontation of opposites. Only here, in life on Earth, where opposites clash together, can the general level of consciousness be raised." And then another quote from Abdu'l-Bahá and from the Baha'i writings says, "Grief and sorrow do not come to us by chance. They are sent to us by the divine mercy for our own perfecting." So that addresses the purpose of all of that in our lives.
Right, because, you know, too, a lot of people can help us, you know, in certain situations. But I think sometimes when we go through the darkest night of the soul, and I mean the darkest, as many will have, when you come out on the other side of it, it's really yourself, your hope, your connection with nature, the universe around you that will bring you out of that. Versus sometimes when people kind of intercede and they try to lift you up before you hit your butt on the bottom, you know, it's sort of like you've, you caught me in a good time because I really didn't want to go that far down, you know, and it kind of like cuts it off short. Mm-hmm. And then you find yourself, you know, that's almost like a who was responsible for my life? Oh, well, now I owe it to you because you saved me, kind of idea. When really the only saving here is yourself in the universe in which you exist. And then that brings us to, you know, what is the universe all about in the first place, you know? And then you talk in your book a little bit about the Creator. I mean, you've got to have hope somewhere. I always talk on the show. I say, you know, you didn't get dropped here by the stork, so go ahead, explain to me And they would be like, ha, 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 and make a joke. But that's the reality of it, is how, what, or who put everything in the semblance of the universe together, right?
Yeah, that's the big picture again. And your reference to learning from nature is so important. And I had a time in my life in my mid-20s when I just I lived in a cabin in the woods, and I would spend most of my days just wandering through the woods and learning from nature around me. And that's so important, because that's where that's one of the reasons Thoreau spent his time at Walden and so many other transcendentalists too, to learn from the natural laws of nature what is really going on, and through that we can get a better sense of what our role and purpose is in that grand whole of the creation that we're part of. And so, yeah, it's about recognizing, and really, I mean, one of the when we think about spiritual practice of any kind, almost any kind of spiritual practice that we can think of, in a way, comes down to the practice of remembrance. In various ways, because and I mean, even something like yoga, which is about union, achieving union, that's a form of remembering where we came from, and that's so important in learning really who we are. It's about remembering where we came from, remembering why we're here, and remembering where we're going from here. And there's an interesting mystic legend about the angel and the unborn soul, which occurs in a number of traditions. Basically, what that legend is saying is that when we were souls in the womb, we were given a kind of an advance preview of our life, what our life on Earth will be like, and then we're brought back to the womb, and then born, come into this world screaming and kicking, and with the goal of remembering what we once knew as unborn souls, about who we are, where we came from. And so the legend really ends, or kind of goes on to say, that that's the purpose of our life, is to remember who we are, where we came from, where we're going. And it's there's so many ways we can accomplish that through any one of the hundreds, thousands of spiritual practices that we can have available to us now, with this instantaneous communication and connection around the world. So many choices and options we have for doing that, for that practice of remembrance. But
you know, we see a lot of this now, and we say people are I'm getting connected, I go to meditation, you know, I go to my yoga class, I go to whatever it might be. They hop in their car, you know, they're getting dressed on the way getting to the car, they're yelling on their cell phone, and they're stuffing food in their face, and, you know, and they're blowing the horn because someone's in their way. I think, you know, while we might want to dabble into it, I think sometimes complete, as you've said, you know, being in the woods and being separated from it really brings you to that, to see, in other words, to see what the human is really made out of, versus saying, oh, yeah, I'm doing it because it's a fad. You know, there was a time there everybody was going around saying, namaste, I send you light, oh, I love you. And it's like, oh, those words, you have no clue. Please stop, you know. And it's almost like, you know, it's almost like you want to just say, please, you know, let's, I don't know. It's just, when you get into it, it just doesn't even feel right. Do you know what I mean sometimes?
Well, yeah, it has to be any
authentic,
any practice has to be authentic for sure, and real and true. And we have to have a sense of why we're doing it, what it's intended to lead us to, and that also that if we make progress as we would hope and want to, that it's really not ending. it's an ongoing, lifelong process of maintaining that. Even if we have a peak experience of some kind that gives us a sense of the oneness of creation, that peak experience may be only momentary unless we recognize that for what it is, and that once we, and also that once we have that awareness of the entire creation as one, that we can't go back to living in the realm of duality any longer, because we've had that experience already of its oneness. It's still, even with that, it becomes a process of daily work and practice.
I think all of these practices that I just outlined, people are kind of like dabbling with it, and they're not really engaged in it. Because if you were engaged in it, you would notice that that's probably not what you would be doing. You might, you know, on your way out, and you might be choosing to have a little bit different life around that. So I think sometimes that's a perfect example of what I just said, is that, you know, when you're falling down the well and someone pulls you up, you know, it's sort of like you didn't quite want to get all the way into all of that spiritual and esoteric philosophical kind of conversation. You kind of just wanted to go to yoga because you're supposed to do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and is that more of a social thing or a spiritual thing? And it can be both, though, too. But yeah, that's kind of like what we were talking about before with the the doctor giving you the medication that turns you around, pulls you out, rather than going through it yourself. The doctor isn't going to bring the transformation about. It's only you yourself that's going to do it for yourself.
Don't you think that it's really, the bottom line is really about what is the strength, what is the resilience, what is the essence of the being is what really comes out in the end. In other words, all of that other stuff around it doesn't mean a hill of beans. It might be the dressing on the cake, but then it's eventually where you get. You know that old story, we're going to peel the onion and see, you know, and go through our story. And it's like, well, dude, the onion on the outside is the same thing as on the inside. What's your point, you know? And it's like, it just doesn't get anywhere. So I think sometimes when we say the dark night of the soul hits your butt on the bottom, or the one where you start to meditate and mindfulness and you're thinking you're really almost touching that space, is really about giving hope, giving trust to that last second, and just being willing and being present and just let everything else fall away. And that's really the essence that we're trying to, quote, get to. Yes?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of, we kind of touched on this before, I think, when we talk about all of the forces coming at us and wanting us to be such and such and whoever, we with or without those, we're always going to have multiple identities in this, temporal realm. And those multiple identities that we have are just that. They're temporal. And so it's really a matter when we want to know who we are at our essence, it's not about any of those temporal identities that we tend to put so much energy into, and that also at the same time create separation between us and others. Mm-hmm. It's going further down and asking ourselves if we could strip away all of our temporal identities, what would remain? And when we think about that, the only thing that there would be left after we strip away all of our temporal identities would be our soul. Mm-hmm. And that is who we are in an eternal realm. And so that's where the focus needs to be kept. I mean, there's no way we cannot carry around all of these temporal identities. And I'm talking about physical, genetic, social, psychological identities. We know them all. They're always going to be with us. But they're not going to be with us in the next realm or the next part of the journey.
Right.
That the only thing that will be, will remain, is our soul, and that's what that's what unites all of us as human beings, not only as human beings but as spiritual beings, because we all come from the same Creator. And that, and this is an, there's an interesting piece about how so that's getting to the level of love, when we can understand that we're all souls having come from the same Creator. That's about getting to a recognition of unconditional love, and
right.
That can be connected to, this is a real interesting connection between love and science. And when we do that in a certain way, we can realize that those two together, love and science, can eliminate all forms of prejudice that we live by because of our multiple identities. So most important from our new understanding of DNA is that is the interrelatedness of all human beings, and that we share that not only the same common ancestors, but that we're also, all of us on the earth right now, are at the most 50th cousins. We're literally all related. And when we begin to think about how the Native American concept of we are related really is true not only spiritually but scientifically now through DNA, that changes everything in terms of unifying not only love and science but spirituality and science. They become united in the concept of we literally, as a human family, are all related by at least 50th cousins. And that can change everything, the way we understand, the way we see and relate to each other.
Right. You know, Robert, we've come to the end of the time. I'd love to have you back on another time, if you'd be willing, because I think we can continue this story, and it's a pleasure to have you and to speak with you. I think, many things that we think about, we try to put into easier terms for our listeners to listen to and to understand. It's just about how can we dance along this journey, don't you think?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, we're all on the same journey, and the more we understand what it's really about, the more we'll realize our connectedness.
Right. Well, Robert, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, you can go to my website, which is robertatkinson.net, and you can find out all about the book there. You can click on from my website through Amazon to get the book. And when you are on my website, you'll also notice the Oneness Pledge kind of pops up. So if you want to sign up for my mailing list, you'll get a frameable copy of the Oneness Pledge, which is, in all my thoughts and actions, I pledge to look upon all things with the eye of oneness. That's a kind of a free gift for anyone who wants to have that oneness pledge and make that part of your regular practice as well. Because I think that can become a mantra, and with any other existing practices, that'll change things, the way we see each other.
Robert, thank you so much for your time. What we'll do is, the link is on the bottom of today's show page. You click on it, you go directly to your website, okay?
Great.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for joining us. We'd love to have you back on again in the future, yes?
Thank you, sure. It'd be my pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information again about Robert Atkinson, his book is The Story of Our Time, From Duality to Interconnectedness to Oneness. Please do click on the link. You'll go directly to his website. He also has a newsletter. Please sign up for that. And there's also some other information there, and also the Oneness Pledge. And it's all truly about being able to say, you know, hey, it's not all about what I want, how I want it to be, and oh gosh, get out of my way because this is where I'm going. It's all about we are all connected. So we talk about these topics a lot in various different ways with different guests, and it's about being able to listen, pick and choose some words that might kind of start to resonate, turn your conversation off, and be able to say, you know what, I'm just going to trust and hope and be present in the world in the present moment. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.